Chapter 10. Der late an evening, Archer inclined to the former theory. He fancied that New York was still completely undifferentiated, and the conjecture nettled him. Last night, he said, New York laid itself out for you. The Van der Leydens do nothing by halves. No. How kind they are. It was such a nice party. Everyone seems to have such an esteem for them. The terms were hardly adequate. She might have spoken in that way of a tea party at the dear old Miss Lanning's. The Van der Leydens, said Archer, feeling himself pompous as he spoke, are the most powerful influence in New York society. Unfortunately, owing to her health, they receive very seldom. She unclasped her hands from behind her head, and looked at him meditatively. Isn't that perhaps the reason? The reason, for their great influence, that they make themselves so rare. He colored a little, stared at her, and suddenly felt the penetration of the remark. At a stroke as he had pricked the Van der Leydens and they collapsed. He laughed, and sacrificed them. Nastasia brought the tea, with handleless Japanese cups and little covered dishes, placing the tray on a low table. But you'll explain these things to me, you'll tell me all I ought to know, Madame Olenska continued, leaning forward to hand him his cup. It's you who are telling me, opening my eyes to things I'd looked at so long, that I'd ceased to see them. She detached a small gold cigarette case from one of her bracelets, held it out to him, and took a cigarette herself. On the chimney were long spills for lighting them. Ah, then we can both help each other. But I want help so much more. You must tell me just what to do. It was on the tip of his tongue to reply. Aunt be seen driving about the streets with Beaufort, but he was being too deeply drawn into the atmosphere of the room, which was her atmosphere, and to give advice of that sort would have been like telling someone who was bargaining for attar of roses in Samarkand, that one should always be provided with arctics for a New York winter. New York seemed much farther off than Samarkand, and if they were indeed to help each other she was rendering, what might prove the first of their mutual services, by making him look at his native city objectively. Viewed thus, as through the wrong end of a telescope, it looked disconcertingly small and distant, but then from Samarkand it would. A flame darted from the logs and she bent over the fire, stretching her thin hand so close to it that a faint halo shone about the oval nails. The light touched to russet the rings of dark hair escaping from her braids, and made her pale face paler. There are plenty of people to tell you what to do, Archer rejoined, obscurely envious of them. Oh, all my aunts? And my dear old granny? She considered the idea impartially. They are all a little vexed with me for setting up for myself, poor granny especially. She wanted to keep me with her, but I had to be free. He was impressed by this light way of speaking of the formidable Catherine, and moved by the thought of what must have given Madame Olenska this thirst for even the loneliest kind of freedom. But the idea of Beaufort gnawed him. I think I understand how you feel, he said. Till, your family can advise you. Explain differences. Show you the way. She lifted her thin black eyebrows. Is New York such a labyrinth? I thought it so straight up and down like Fifth Avenue. And with all the cross streets numbered. She seemed to guess his faint disapproval of this, and added, with a rare smile that enchanted her whole face. If you knew how I like it for, just that the straight up and downness, and the big honest labels on everything. He saw his chance. Everything may be labeled, but everybody is not. Perhaps. I may simplify too much, but you'll warn me if I do. She turned from the fire to look at him. There are only two people here who make me feel as if they understood what I mean, and could explain things to me. You and Mr. Beaufort. Archer winced at the joining of the names, and then, with a quick readjustment, understood, sympathized, and pitied. So close to the powers of evil she must have lived, that she still breathed more freely in their air. But since she felt that he understood her also, his business would be to make her see Beaufort as he really was, with all he represented and abhorred. He answered gently, "Understand. But just at first, don't let go of your old friend's hands. I mean the older women, your Granny Midget, Mrs. Welland, Mrs. van der Leyden. They like and admire you, they want to help you." She shook her head and sighed. I know. But on condition that they don't hear anything unpleasant. Aunt Welland put it in those very words when I tried. ... Does no one want to know the truth here, Mr. Archer? The real loneliness is living among all these kind people who only ask one to pretend. She lifted her hands to her face, and he saw her thin shoulders shaken by a sob. Madam Olenska. Oh, don't, Ellen, he cried, starting up and bending over her. He drew down one of her hands, clasping and chafing it like a child's while he murmured reassuring words. But in a moment she freed herself, and looked up at him with wet lashes. Does no one cry here either? I suppose there's no need to, in heaven, she said, straightening her loosened braids with a laugh, and bending over the tea-kettle. It was burned into his consciousness that he had called her Len, called her so twice, and that she had not noticed it. Far down the inverted telescope he saw the faint white figure of May Welland in New York. Suddenly Nastasia put her head in to say something in her rich Italian. Madame Olenska, again with a hand at her hair, uttered an exclamation of assent, a flashing eye of Gaia, and the Duke of St. Austria entered, piloting a tremendous black-wigged and red-plumed lady in overflowing furs. My dear Countess, I've brought an old friend of mine to see you, Mrs. Struthers. She wasn't asked to the party last night, and she wants to know you. The Duke beamed on the group, and Madame Olenska advanced with a murmur of welcome toward the queer couple. She seemed to have no idea how oddly matched they were, nor what a liberty the Duke had taken in bringing his companion, and to do him justice, as Archer perceived, the Duke seemed as unaware of it himself. Of course I want to know you, my dear, cried Mrs. Struthers in a round rolling voice that matched her bold feathers and her brazen wig. Want to know everybody who's young and interesting and charming. And the Duke tells me you like music, didn't you, Duke? You're a pianist yourself, I believe. Well, do you want to hear Sarasate play tomorrow evening at my house? You know I've something going on every Sunday evening. It's the day when New York doesn't know what to do with itself, and so I say to it, ... and be amused. ... And the Duke thought you'd be tempted by Sarasate. You'll find a number of your friends. Madame Olenska's face grew brilliant with pleasure. How kind. How good of the Duke to think of me. She pushed a chair up to the tea table, and Mrs. Struthers sank into it delectably. Of course I shall be too happy to come. That's all right, my dear. And bring your young gentleman with you. Mrs. Struthers extended a hail fellow hand to Archer. Can't put a name to you, but I'm sure I've met you. I've met everybody, here, or in Paris or London. Aren't you in diplomacy? All the diplomatists come to me. You like music too? Duke, you must be sure to bring him. The Duke said, Aether from the depths of his beard, and Archer withdrew with a stiffly circular bow that made him feel as full of spine as a self-conscious schoolboy among careless and unnoticing elders. He was not sorry for the denouement of his visit. He only wished it had come sooner, and spared him a certain waste of emotion. As he went out into the wintry night, New York again became vast and imminent, and May Welland the loveliest woman in it. He turned into his florist's, to send her the daily box of lilies of the valley which, to his confusion, he found he had forgotten that morning. As he wrote a word on his card, and waited for an envelope, he glanced about the embowered shop, and his eye lit on a cluster of yellow roses. He had never seen any as sun-golden before, and his first impulse was to send them to May instead of the lilies. But they did not look like her. There was something too rich, too strong, in their fiery beauty. In a sudden revulsion of mood, and almost without knowing what he did, he signed to the florist, to lay the roses in another long box, and slipped his card into a second envelope, on which he wrote the name of the Countess Olenska. Then, just as he was turning away, he drew the card out again, and left the empty envelope on the box. "They'll go at once?" he inquired, pointing to the roses. The florist assured him that they would. X. The next day he persuaded May to escape for a walk in the park after luncheon. As was the custom in old-fashioned Episcopalian New York, she usually accompanied her parents to church on Sunday afternoons. But Mrs. Welland condoned her truancy, having that very morning won her over to the necessity of a long engagement, with time to prepare a hand-embroidered trousseau containing the proper number of dozens. The day was delectable. The bare vaulting of trees along the mall was sailed with lapis lazuli, and arched above snow that shone like splintered crystals. It was the weather to call out May's radiance, and she burned like a young maple in the frost. Archer was proud of the glances turned on her, and the simple joy of possessorship cleared away his underlying perplexities. "It's so delicious waking every morning to smell lilies of the valley in one's room," she said. "Yesterday they came late. I hadn't time in the morning, but your remembering each day to send them makes me love them so much more than if you'd given a standing order, and they came every morning on the minute, like one's music teacher, as I know Gertrude Lefferts did, for instance, when she and Lawrence were engaged." "Ah, they would," laughed Archer, amused at her keenness. He looked sideways at her fruit-like cheek, and felt rich and secure enough to add, "And I sent your lilies yesterday afternoon. I saw some rather gorgeous yellow roses, and packed them off to Madame Olenska. Was that right?" "How dear of you. Anything of that kind delights her. It's odd she didn't mention it. She lunched with us today, and spoke of Mr. Beaufort's having sent her wonderful orchids, and Cousin Henry van der Leyden a whole hamper of carnations from Skuytercliff. She seemed so surprised to receive flowers. Don't people send them in Europe? She thinks it such a pretty custom." "Oh, well, no wonder mine were overshadowed by Beaufort's," said Archer irritably. Then he remembered that he had not put a card with the roses, and was vexed at having spoken of them. He wanted to say, "Called on your cousin yesterday," but hesitated. If Madame Olenska had not spoken of his visit, it might seem awkward that he should. Yet not to do so gave the affair an air of mystery that he disliked. To shake off the question, he began to talk of their own plans, their future, and Mrs. Welland's insistence on a long engagement. "If you call it long, Isabel Chivers and Reggie were engaged for 2 years. Grace and Thorley for nearly a year and a half. Why aren't we very well off as we are?" It was the traditional maidenly interrogation, and he felt ashamed of himself for finding it singularly childish. No doubt she simply echoed what was said for her, but she was nearing her 22nd birthday, and he wondered at what age ice women began to speak for themselves. "Never, if we won't let them, I suppose," he mused. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.